Okay, well, we'll just get started. Welcome back. We haven't seen many of you for at least almost 2 months, really. So, as we mentioned last time, instead of having two sessions, we decided to just have one session in the summer, and we'll record it, and people can watch later. Last year, as you know, we talked about our bread and butter tri-agency. This year, we're talking about our bread and butter Fonds de Recherche du Québec. They're the FRQ. They used to be FQR. So it's FRQNT, FRQSC, FRQS now, but you may have seen FQR. And I'll explain why that changed, but it's all the same agencies, and don't worry too much. In fact, the agencies themselves have been really slow about updating their websites, so it still has the old names. So just a quick overview of the presentation. I'm going to talk a little bit about the FRQ just in general, introduction. Some strategies for applying. The extranet, which is the electronic system they use, two of the agencies use, and I'll explain that. Post-award management, and then Q&A. But of course, like all these RAND sessions, if you have a question, just put your hand up, and I'm happy to answer it as we go along. If you need any clarifications, don't hesitate. We want this to be interactive, as always, so don't hesitate to ask any questions. So when I did the tri-agencies, I did a little history of the tri-agencies, and some people actually thought it was really interesting. I was kind of torn on whether or not I should put it in, but it turned out that people were interested in knowing a little bit about them and how they came to be. So I've done the same thing for the FRQ. So in 1964 is really when this starts. It's important to note that Quebec didn't have a Ministry of Education until the 60s. In Ontario, 1878 was when they had a Ministry of Education. So you get the idea that Quebec actually has done a lot in the past few decades to really change the way it approaches post-secondary education. But for many years, McGill was the oddball. McGill was the university, and then there was Laval and UDAM to a degree, but there wasn't a ministry. The provincial government wasn't really looking after higher education or research at post-secondary institutions. So you have basically the FRQS originates from 1964. Then you have, it's renamed in 1974. And then in 1979, you have the Conseil québécois de la recherche sociale. This is kind of a mixture of what CIHR is now and SHRC. It was social science research, but largely health-focused, so it was to improve society. And then you have the Fonds pour la formation des chercheurs et à l'aide de la FCAR. That's what it was always known as, or FCAR. 1981, that's when that one comes in, and that one supports natural sciences and engineering. And then you have the birth of the FRSQ. It's important to note that unlike the tri-agencies, where, if you recall in the same slide last year, the tri-agencies was natural sciences and engineering, and then everything came out of that. So from the National Research Council, you had what becomes CIHR, and then long after, you have SHRC. If you notice here, the natural sciences and technology were the last to come into it as an agency. So it's quite recent that there's actual funding for natural sciences and engineering research in Quebec. And then 2001 is when they're organized under the Fonds, and then they align better with the CIHR, SHRC, and NSERC. So they kind of merged all the what they had for funding agencies, and then they became essentially the tri-agencies. And then in 2011, Bill 130 came into effect, restructuring the three funding agencies under the leadership of the Chief Scientific Officer. So before, they were each was its own entity, each was its own kind of, not government department, but government agency. And there was no oversight between all amongst them. So what they did was they merged them. So they weren't all just the tri-agencies. They were now kind of one agency with three components to it. And why were they created? They were created to foster the development of research-intensive universities in Quebec, as many of you know, in the 60s, they took a lot of initiatives to try and change higher education in Quebec. And one of them was to better focus on the research intensity in the Quebec universities. And they wanted to increase competitiveness of Quebec-based researchers with the tri-agencies. So if you take that as their raison d'être, it makes a lot of sense because most of their grants are research development. So they're startup grants, helping researchers who are just getting started get their lab going, hire a few students to advance their program of research, which would then make them more competitive for an NSERC Discovery Grant, a SHRC Insight Grant, those funding opportunities. There's partnership development, fostering collaborations or clusters, team grants, regroupement, infrastructure development, and this one, most of us know the regroupement stratégique. They fall mostly under infrastructure, but there is a partnership element in that they are supposed to not only cluster like-minded researchers, but they're supposed to foster smaller clusters within those. So there's more teams that kind of grow out of that regroupement. And then they may get a team grant from the provincial agencies, or they may go to the tri-agencies and get a larger multi-million dollar funding. So the Fonds de Recherche du Québec, this came into effect July 1st, 2011. It merged all three agencies under one umbrella. So you have the FRQ, and then when you see them now, it's like FRQ-NT-SC and -S. I don't think I used the dash during the presentation, so excuse me, but I just realized that. I don't think I did. So you can judge me based on that. I will fix it when I post it. The reason for the FRQ existing as an oversight for all three agencies is to better foster harmonization across the agencies, and this is something that we're definitely seeing, and I'll go into greater detail. They've done quite a few changes. This year they've announced quite a few changes that bring them more in line. So it used to be that if you were a research administrator, it wasn't like the tri-agencies where you knew roughly what perspective they had for all three agencies and you could look for a few precisions here and there. For the FRQ, you had to basically treat each sponsor like its own entity. So you had to go through their own guidelines, how did they approach it. And so it was very complicated for universities, very complicated for researchers as well. And so they've tried to make it more streamlined amongst all three of them. Foster interdisciplinary research by bringing all agencies closer together. To a degree, there was a bit of cooperation between the natural sciences, the Nature, Technologie, and Société Culture. They used to fund regroupement stratégique. If they overlap between the two agencies, they would fund from both envelopes. And we have a few of those. We have some that are funded by both agencies, which for research administrators means that we have a whole bunch of funds because they do pay us separately. But that's a whole other problem. But they want to foster interdisciplinary research by bringing them all, because they used to all launch their programs here and there, strategic programs, but they wouldn't actually talk to each other to see, you know, would you like to get in on this? Would you like to co-fund some initiatives? What are you doing to support this? So they're hoping to eventually have more conversations happening at the program delivery level so that they can better meet the needs of the community. And improve knowledge mobilization, knowledge transfer of funded research. That's something, if you go on the FRQ itself, has its own website, and then the agencies have their websites. If you go on the FRQ website, you definitely see that there's a real attention for knowledge mobilization and knowledge translation, because they have press releases about research discoveries across all the agencies. They do their own events to promote research. So so I think the FRQ idea is actually, it's going well for them. Within the program delivery side of the agencies, there's a few hiccups going on, but definitely it's something that we as research administrators, as well as the researchers, will benefit from. So where does their money go? This is taken directly from their report. So as you see, this is the total budget, so this is all three agencies together, and it just shows the breakdown. I don't need to go too much into it. As you see, they've same thing as the tri-agency scholarships, grants, form most of the funding that they do. So who does what? If you click on these, when you look at the presentation later, it's hyperlinked to each one of them has a web page that describes the domains of research that fall under their mandate. Unlike CIHR and SHRC, we talked about this last year, where they have a clear guideline on what can go to CIHR and what can go to SHRC, and if you apply to SHRC with something that should be at CIHR, they kick it back. It's not as clear cut between these agencies, but there's definitely overlap. What they generally say is, they used to say that you can only apply to one agency. If you were funded by SC, the other ones were no longer available to you. Now what they're saying is, depending on the research, you could be eligible at more than one, but you have to demonstrate that this project is different than the other activities that you've been funded through the other agencies. So Santhi just generally supports all health-related research, but it's definitely still quite biomedical. Société Culture, it's all research intended to add to our understanding. This is actually the Shirk mandate because they don't have a really clear mandate. So I just borrowed the Shirk one because it's the same. They consider anything that's eligible at Shirk to be eligible at SC. And then Nature Technologie is natural sciences and engineering. And you'll see their budgets listed here. And I'll have a slide next, just to point out that the NT budget that's listed does not include equipment grants, because as you know, with NT you can request equipment. Equipment is paid out of a separate entity, like it's actually paid from a completely different envelope. It's actually not NT money that we receive. That's why we have to put them in a different fund and we have to treat them separately. So when they count their budget, they don't count the actual equipment grants. Oh yeah, and then health related. If you're ever not clear on where you should be applying, contact OSR and we can help you figure out where it should be. So I thought this would be interesting because, as I said, the history of the tri-agency is a bit different than the history of the FRQ. So this gives you a better idea of where things stand in terms of overall budget of the tri-agencies, where does the money go? Overall budget of the FRQ, where does the money go? For those of us, and I'm smiling because I'm in the social sciences humanities, as you can see, so we're actually have quite an advantage here in Quebec that we have a dedicated agency that funds investigator-initiated social sciences humanities research. That is quite rare. Most other provinces, the only time you can get social sciences humanities or research for social sciences humanities research is if it's addressing a strategic priority of a government agency, let's say the Ministry of Education or something like that. Whereas we have this agency that actually gets more money than the NSERC equivalent. So that is quite a feat for us. Over the years, previously, like before the 2000s, the FRQS, if you added up all the budgets, was about 75% of the total budget. And now it's 26, so it's pretty much their half the budget, and then the other half is between the other two agencies. And Shirk is 15%. So you can see why, so I guess this is what I said to Marlene when we were going over the presentation. Sometimes we wonder, why do we apply to the FRQ at all? Because there are a lot of research administration tasks that are a little more complicated than administering a tri-agency. But for social sciences humanities researchers, it's worth the hassle because it does give them quite an advantage when it comes to tri-agency funding as well as just supporting their programs of research. So how do we do? McGill's market share of FRQ grants. The McGill side here is based on data up from up to 2011-12. And so we are second behind UDAM. Quite far behind UDAM, but we're second. So that's something. So for our market share in terms of by agency, we're second for the FRQS. And this is because we do have a few research centers that do get the bulk of the funding. Pretty much most of the funding that's counted there is going to a few selected centers and grants. We don't have a long list of FRQS funding. We just have a few that get a lot of money. For the NT, we're third, which is quite good. For the SC, it's not surprising that it is more competitive because most Quebec universities have a mandate for social sciences humanities research. For NT and S, not all of them have researchers or a big pool of researchers doing working in those domains. For SC, there is. All the Université de Québec network, they all have liberal arts as their main focus. So it's not surprising that we are below some others. And if you go on the when I was on the FRQSC website, they actually list they look in the universities and they figure out how much clientele they serve. And they have Concordia. For Concordia, for example, 70% of Concordia researchers fall under the SC mandate. So it gives you an idea of where we're, when you consider how we're distributed amongst the domains, we're not doing poorly. So that's something to talk about as well. And then because the FRQ is focused on making our researchers more competitive in the tri-agencies, how are we doing? And this is a question I wanted to ask myself. So I thought it would be interesting to show. We're not doing that badly. It's quite interesting because if you look at the proportion of population in these provinces in relation to the population of Canada, it's almost in line with how much they get. It's pretty much where we would all fall, which is quite interesting. Obviously, Ontario is going to beat us. That's just that we will never beat Ontario when it comes to tri-agency funding because they have more universities. But we are second, and then there's BC and Alberta. Just a note for CIHR, Alberta isn't separated, so I had to kind of drill down and see. They put them in the prairies, and just they put prairies, this is how much we give. So I had to figure out of the prairies, how much is Alberta? And then the whole debate on is Alberta prairies was a whole other thing, but I think it was a way for them to camouflage the fact that Manitoba and Saskatchewan get very little money from CIHR. But obviously, and BC is interesting too because, as you know, BC doesn't have that many universities that are really research intensive. They have some that are university colleges, but they don't have that many. So BC's number is significant because it's market share of a few universities. So the strategic priorities of the FRQ, this is across all the agencies, development of major intersectoral research projects, international partnership strategy, we're definitely seeing that. There's more funding opportunities co-funded by outside organizations. It's also important to remember that when Quebec uses international, they also mean outside of Quebec. So an initiative involving Nova Scotia or Ontario does fall under international strategy. So sometimes you'll see a funding opportunity and you'll think, what's international about this? They're working with someone else in Canada, but that's because international to them is outside Quebec. Support for major or common platforms and equipment, that's mostly CFI. Support for research training and support for basic research. And the support for basic research is important because we've kind of seen the tri-agencies more recently in presentations. They're really focusing, well, they're pulling it back. They used to be like we wanted to focus on strategic priorities. Now you're seeing in the budget document as well that they are looking more at reinforcing their support for investigator-initiated research. Okay, so with this in mind, strategies for applying. You will see that for those who went to the tri-agency presentation, it's basically the same. I thought maybe I should change it, but generally speaking, there are very few things to change, except for making links to the benefit to Canada became making links to the benefit to Quebec. If you write a strong tri-agency proposal, it's a strong FRQ proposal, provided that you're following their guidelines and you have all the information in there. They're a bit more rigid in terms of the format for the presentation, so there's like text boxes and things in the form. But as long as you address all those elements, a competitive proposal there is a competitive proposal elsewhere. Oh, and one thing to note is that a consideration as well is that if you're preparing a presentation and you are well funded by other agencies, you should address that. You should be open about that and justify how this funding from the FRQ is supporting new elements of your program of research. Because their focus is so much on research development, they don't want to fund something that is already well funded by another agency. They want to fund research in its initial stages, help you get a head start so that you're more competitive elsewhere in securing a larger grant. So major differences from the tri-agencies. Language of the application. This is the question we always get. You can present your application in English or French. There are no restrictions, except for you must provide a French translation of the title and the summary page. You have to do this. If you don't do it, it will be deemed ineligible and returned to you. OSR can assist with translation services. We know that this is something that, you know, as part of our services to assist you in researchers in preparing applications, we know that this has to happen. So we do offer translation. We can connect for translation services. You just have to contact us well in advance. So contact OSR as soon as, if you know a researcher is preparing an application to any of the agencies and we'll be submitting in English, which is most likely the case, please contact OSR and let us know so that we can put their name in the list of in the workflow. Citizenship of applicants. Unlike the tri-agencies, where the tri-agencies say, if you're affiliated with a Canadian institution, we consider you Canadian. Regardless of what your citizenship is, you are eligible, you can receive these funds. The FRQ does not have that. They require that you be a Canadian citizen or a permanent resident. But they don't require it at the time of application. So you can apply being on a work visa with the understanding that you have to have the process underway. It used to be the final installment of your grant. So if your grant was 4 years, the fourth year you had to provide all these documents to the FRQ proving that you had obtained permanent residency. Now they've just announced they've changed it. So this is one of the frustrations of the FRQ that Marlene and I are, is that every time we think we've got it down and we know what they want, they change everything. So always check their guidelines, just as a rule, always check their website. So what they require now is at the time of application, you have to provide a copy of the visa. And for those of you like me that are logical, you think, well, that makes no sense, because if you're working at a Canadian university, you obviously have a visa. Why would they need that? But they need a copy of your visa. So that's to go through the peer review process. Then at the end of the peer review process, if that proposal is recommended for funding, to obtain the first installment so that McGill gets paid, you have to provide your Certificat de Sélection de Québec. So as some of you may know, the permanent residency process in Quebec, you have to be approved by Quebec, by a Quebec agency, who then allows you to submit to Citizenship and Immigration Canada. So there's two steps, unlike rest of Canada, where you just go to Citizenship and Immigration. So you have to have your certificat to go to the federal agency. So what they require at the first installment is that CSQ proof. You provide that, McGill gets paid its first installment. For the second installment, then you have to prove it's under review with Citizenship and Immigration Canada. For the Citizenship and Immigration Canada, they don't necessarily require that you have it in hand. You just have to be able to provide proof that it's under review there. So they usually give some type of acknowledgement of receipt. You know, there's a little document, thank you for providing, your file number is this. That they will accept as proof of permanent residency until it's obtained. This is different, though, because this is the first year they've had this. So for a lot of researchers, they're having difficulty with this CSQ part of it. The citizenship and immigration is usually pretty straightforward, but the CSQ can cause quite a long process, especially if people aren't French, if their French isn't up to par. And they can't pass the tests, it can cause a delay. So if any researchers are, we used to just say, if you were applying, just say it's underway, and then if it gets awarded, then, you know, we'll deal with all the documents. We can't do that anymore. So if the researcher is planning on submitting a proposal, like let's say, these usually apply to new researchers because they're just getting here. If they plan to apply this year, a question we should be asking is, okay, have you started your process for permanent residency? If not, it doesn't mean that we won't submit. We will likely still submit, but they need to know that there will be a hold on their reward until it's satisfied. And sometimes it can take a really long time. Yes? It depends. Yes. On the team grants, it depends. It's absolutely, for the principal investigator, this has to be satisfied, but sometimes on the team grants, if the person hasn't obtained it, they will change their status in the team. You know, because there's like there's the full university researcher, and then there's the kind of collaborator role. They may demote that person to the collaborator role and then move them back when they have obtained it. That's a case-by-case basis, so it's really, if you have one of those situations, you should talk to OSR, and we can talk to the agency and see what needs to happen. The agency generally has been lenient on it. If the researcher could prove that their CSQ is underway, and it's not their fault necessarily that they haven't obtained it, sometimes they will release that installment, but it's... Yeah, it takes a lot of back and forth each time. So if we can avoid that with every person, it would be great. But
we have to say that these exactly how they're now going to be accepting CSQs that are in review but not yet updated. They used to be a little bit more lenient. Now it's, we don't know.
And for those who read the NT, the Natil Technologie guidelines, when they first released them, it said originally that you had to have your CSQ to apply. But they're switching that because I'll explain this in a second, but the NT didn't know that the new common rules had gone up, so they had misunderstood what the guidelines were. So it's they're fixing it, but you don't need it to apply. Absolutely, if you're intending to apply, the researcher can apply, but they should be talking to OSR to see what needs to happen. And it is unfortunate because we're research administrators. I'm not an expert on citizenship and immigration, but here I am finding myself on many occasions doing this stuff. Now I consider myself kind of an expert. I mean, I know Linda in the Grants and Agreements team. She also knows a lot about it. This isn't our area of expertise, but you learn as you go along because you have to deal with these things. And also, I mean, we have to provide them to the agency. So the researcher has to provide us a copy of their permanent resident status, and then we have to provide it to the agency. I personally don't like getting that confidential information, but we have to deal with it because that's the agency requires it. So the types of grant funding that you see at the FRQ are startup grants, strategic grants, and infrastructure. Startup grants are your new researcher. All three of the agencies have some type of new researcher. There's the Charles Boursier for the FRQS. That one is the salary award, and then there's often a research portion that goes along with it. Strategic grants are responding to particular issues or problems, often involve partnerships. Some examples would be teen grants, Action Concertée, MyTax Accelerate. The MyTax Accelerate is FRQNT only, so regardless of what domain the researcher is doing the MyTax internship in, it always comes from FRQNT. And Action Concertée, these are truly strategic programs, so they often have more reporting than other programs. So it's always good to make sure the researcher knows that, and there's often a holdback on the final report. So if the researcher does not submit the final report, McGill doesn't get paid, I think it's 10%? Is it 10%? Yeah. We're out 10% of the last installment. So it's very important that they stay on top of it. They don't treat it like your standard grant. So they need to be tracking the reporting deadlines. And they are specified in the notice of award. Infrastructure are the regroupements, the centers, all those big, big grants. That's where they fall. And then the application process, just quickly. It's the exact same thing as other agencies. So notice circulated via the funding listserv. Most of them have gone out for the FRQs, so if you are subscribed to the funding listservs, you can find the OSR deadlines in there and the requirements for each application. So they submit, prepare the application, the OSR deadline for full review, usually 10 business days, but check the notice that was sent to the listserv. And then there's OSR deadline for submission, so they have time to submit it, get a review, get feedback, work on it some more. There's that time, but if they elect to just submit at the last minute, we consider the last minute the day before. And same thing with, as I mentioned, with the tri-agencies, their system doesn't necessarily close at 5 p.m., but we close it at 5 p.m. So make sure that if researchers are submitting at the last minute that OSR is aware that it's coming. And so, sorry, 4? Oh, okay, it's 4 p.m. So, oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. They put 4 p.m. But in this case, this is what's great between all of us and the recording here. We can, in that system, we can set our own deadline. So the researchers, when they go in, they'll see if we want to put it a day before, we'll put it a day before. And when they go in, it shows you have, you know, until that day to submit. It doesn't show them the agency deadline. So if ever you see, if ever a researcher says I've lost access to the form or I can't submit, it's likely because our own deadline has expired. So they should be contacting OSR and we can modify the deadline or we can give them an extension. But it does allow us to do that, and that is something that's very nice, that I really like. I wish every system had that. CIHR does, to a degree, but it still shows the other date. So, as we said, you get to know the FRQ, and then they change the rules. So what happens every time the results are announced? This picture of Beaker and the place on fire, because that's every time... Marlene had, we tried to find a picture of an animated thing of someone just running across the screen with, like, you know, flailing Kermit the Frog Muppet hands. But this one was actually, this one made me laugh so hard I put it in, because this is exactly what we're doing every year. When the results come in for FRQ, we are just running around with our heads cut off trying to figure out what's going on. And usually the FRQ tends to change something without telling us. So when the notice of awards come in, we think we have it down, and then we have to change something, so we have to go back into all these awards. It's never fun, but that's our problem. So for the FRQ NT and SC, the results are posted online and communicated to the researchers simultaneously. And then we approve based on that list. Notices of award for the SC usually come in after. NT doesn't always send notices of, they don't send anything. For the FRQS, we never know how we're going to get those notice of awards. Generally speaking, they're sent to the PI, sometimes with a copy to, sometimes LV, sometimes someone else, sometimes the departmental administrator. Like, it's all over the place. So if you know anyone who says, if a researcher comes up to you and says, I just received FRQS funding, please send us the notice of award to awards.osr, because chances are we don't know what's come in, and, you know, we have to work on it that way. And notes on the FRQ award approval, this is an internal, how we work on them here. Applicants can request equipment grants as part of new researcher and team grants for the NT. I mentioned this before. But we have to open them under a separate fund and a separate PT. So we have to, the equipment grant is treated completely separately from the team grant, new researcher grant. So they have the grant and then they have the equipment portion, and they're separate. The tricky part is they have the same award number. So if you search for the award number, for example, in InfoEd, you're going to find two. What we do is we put in the title of the equipment grant, in the title we put equipment grant. So that's how you know which one you're looking at. The equipment grants are open for the entire duration of the project. So if it's, for example, the grant itself, the team grant is 4 years long, inclusive of any extension, we open the equipment grant for that full period. They have access, it's paid in the first year, but they can spend the money anytime, including into the no-cost extension year. And as I said, the equipment grants are paid not from the FRQNT, they're paid from a separate envelope, so that's, there's a whole, that's dealt with behind the scenes. But it's complicated. The FRQS, recipients of salary awards may receive research grant portions as part of their salary award. So the salary award will have a fund number where it's opened as a salary award, and a portion of their salary is charged there. We have to then open another research account for the grant portion. So they will also have two fund numbers. For the FRQSC, they generally only get one fund number. There's no separate equipment portion. Any equipment is expected to be purchased using the grant allocation, and it must be reasonable and justified as advancing the program of research. So for the most part, for the FRQSC, you're going to find one fund. The only time where you find two funds is in the cases of some regroupement stratégique, where it's funded by SC and NT. We do have one in the Faculty of Music that is, because the mandate of the cluster overlaps between those two agencies, they're co-funding it. So we do receive a payment from SC and we do receive a payment from NT, and they're managed in separate funds. So the Extranet, which is the electronic system for FRQNT and SC, it's the everything. We do the submission of applications, the request for installments, which I'll explain a little later, award acceptances, award conditions, interinstitutional transfers of funds, and financial reports. It's all in there. It's actually quite a good system. We like it. I mean, it has quirks, and I'll go into the quirks in a minute, but generally speaking, this is what we use. This is what the central administration at McGill uses for research administration on FRQNT and FRQSC grants. For the PI, it's known as the Dossier de Chercheurs Financiers. So sometimes they will be talking and we'll refer to the extranet. We're just talking about their portfolio. They just need to go in and into their account and it will be there. So, research administrator notes. So, RFMS and OSR, we have institutional access. So, OSR approves all applications, approves requests for installments, which again I'll explain in a second, monitors acceptance of awards and installments, conditional awards, and follows up with PI as required. RFMS enters all financial reports for PI approval and submits report to the agency, and enters all inter-institutional transfers. So if we are the lead and we're issuing money to, let's say, Concordia, we have to put it in the extranet. So if $5,000 is going to Concordia, the RFMS goes in and puts $5,000 to Concordia. Concordia gets an email, and it pops up in their queue. And it also allows us to then more easily track all the financial reports that need to come in, because it's all there. We don't have to manually find all the subawards that we've issued. And this is very, very important. I'm going to... See, it's flashing. It's flashing. Everyone sees flashing. System generates automated emails every time we hit save, and it usually comes from do not respond at FRQ, and researchers will respond to that email and say, I don't understand. Well, it doesn't get to us. If any research, and what happens is it's an automated email that makes it look like it's the FRQ talking to them. But then at the bottom, it will have whoever saved it. So it'll say Amy, Marilena, Nicole. It will show these names, but they don't scroll that far. They just see FRQ, and then they start contacting the agency, and all hell breaks loose. And so as a rule, if a researcher says, I got this cryptic email from the FRQ, because it will be an automated email from the system, just ask them to forward it to you. Most likely, it's actually the question should be addressed to OSR or RFMS and not the agency. But I know the FRQ help desk, and we're not the only ones to do this, the FRQ help desk gets overwhelmed by researchers sending these do not respond messages, like, I don't understand what you're asking, what do you want, sending it there. It's quicker, send it to us. If you're not sure, send it to awards.osr. We'll assess, and it'll either go to RFMS or it can be handled by us. One example is the please go in and complete your financial there's the financial reports. It sends these emails until they approve the financial report. So if they continue to get these emails, if you hear a researcher, and many of them do call and complain that they're getting all these automated emails from the system, it's because they haven't gone in to approve their financial report. So you say, well, you want the emails to stop? Go in and approve the financial report. If you have any questions about the financial report, they should be talking to RFMS. But as soon as they approve the financial report, those emails stop. So that's something that's very important to note. Now, the award acceptance and the request for installment is something I was just talking about. Even though they've applied for the grant, we've submitted it, it's assumed that they want the grant, they have to go in and they have to accept it. So they have to log back into their portfolio, the same one they used to submit the proposal, and say, yes, indeed, I want this grant. And they have to do that within 30 days of the communication of results, so they have to go back in and do it. The agency does send a reminder, but it's best if they, as soon as they know that they've been awarded the grant, just prompt them to go in and accept it, and it saves us a lot of runaround. In the past, the agencies have given extensions on the acceptance, but they're kind of giving the impression that they're not going to be so lenient. So if we can just get that done, it's nice to have it done by the deadline. We don't get those lists of these people haven't accepted and we have to chase after them. We can see in the extranet who has accepted, and usually we're following up with those people directly. But it's not a bad idea to remind researchers, if you know they got a grant from the FRQ, to go in, make sure they accepted it. So the annual request for installments, so they have to accept the grant, and then they have to do the request for installments. So every year, they have to do the demande de versement, and although they, you know, you can assume that if they accepted the grant, they probably want the next installment, they have to go in before the installment is issued, go into their portfolio and say, yes, and report on changes to the research team, changes to the research, and then say, yes, I do indeed want my next installment. Then it gets routed to OSR, who has to click that, yes, this person is still affiliated with the university. We accept to administer this next installment. So we hit yes, and it goes on. This is we, OSR, RFMS, we advance the money knowing that this process happens. So their researcher may see their April 1st, their budget increase, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they've completed this process and McGill has been paid. This has to happen for McGill to get paid. So it's very important. So how does the request for installment work? It's a long process. And the same thing, Beaker with the lab on fire. So usually February or March, there's never a date, just generally February or March, the agency sends out an automated message to grant holders informing them to request the next installment. They have to go in, they complete that process, we hit submit, it goes on to the agency. So they complete the request for installment form. Request for installment form transmitted to OSR for review and approval. OSR approves the request on behalf of McGill University. Then everything goes quiet for about a month. Everything goes quiet. We don't hear anything more. Then the agency releases the results confirming all the installments that will be issued that year and saying, yes, indeed, you did get that grant for this year. You have to go back in and accept it. So the researcher has to go back into their account and say, yes, indeed, I want this installment. And then we have to chase after them, and it's a whole thing. And if they have to do two steps, this is, if I can just reinforce one thing, is that they have to do two steps. They have to request the installment, and then they have to accept the installment. Most researchers, when they get that second email in April or May saying, please go in and request and accept your installment, they said, oh, I already did it, and I did it in February. I don't need to do this. They do need to do this. It's a completely different thing. So we send out reminders to everyone that we know will be receiving a next installment to say, you'll get these emails. Please pay attention to them. And we can see who hasn't accepted, and we follow up directly with people who have taken a long time to accept. Yes?
No, I'd like you to finish this section, and then I'll ask my question. So it's about urgent.
Go ahead now.
So I would just like to understand the logic. All agencies, I know they want to spend their budget, so they are happy to receive, because, you know, for their budget it's like annual, and then, you know, they don't want to have any money to come back to them. So if they, like, would they, I mean, if they...
Oh, no, this is the foolish part, is that if... Okay, again, between us and this recording here. If you miss that deadline, they just continue to follow up with the PI saying, please accept, we've extended the deadline, please accept. So it's not like they're in a hurry to claw the money back. There's just this process that happens that nobody's questioned why we're doing it. And to be honest, from what we've experienced in talking to the agencies, and I'm looking over at people from OSR, what we experience when you're talking with program staff, like program officers, they're not part of this. So they don't understand how silly this process is, because it's managed by the kind of clerical technicians. They monitor all this part. So they don't really, for the program officers, they don't see that this being a really convoluted process, because they don't understand that, for some reason, they don't understand that Tri-Agency April 1st just sends us this big check and says, you know, here are all your payments for the year. They don't see how this is different for program staff. And unfortunately, until program staff realize that this is a foolish process, it won't get changed, because it needs to come from a higher level, and there's no leadership at the higher level to changing this. I think we've raised it as far as we could at McGill to say this is foolish and needs to change, but there's no uptake.
But by saying yes, I want to...
Yeah, no, I know.
Also, like, did they just click yes, or did they also at the same time... confirm that they are still eligible, that they, you know, they're no longer working?
Well, the request for installment process, like the request part, that's where they monitor that. So they have to mention if they're on any leaves, if there have been any changes to the research team. And McGill itself also has to check that the person is still here, they're not on a leave. That's where that is done. And then the accepting of the installment is just the confirmation that, yes, indeed, I want this installment. It is, I believe, just a tick box in their portfolio. The other part is an actual form that has to be transmitted to the agency. The other thing is that these messages, for the most part, are entirely in French. So we send out, and so when we contact researchers, who have missed the deadline, what we usually get as an answer is, oh yeah, I got some emails in French, but I deleted them because I didn't know what they said. So that's usually how this goes. And so we do our best to send out messages from McGill to explain what needs to happen. You're going to get these emails. You have to click on the link. And the emails that we send from OSR and RFMS are in English. So those, we do take that effort to make sure that they're understanding what's going on. But if they don't take action on those emails or just think that they're junk mail and delete them, then they're going to miss this entire process. And they're always, even now that we've been trying to be on top of this more, there's always two or three that will just completely miss the deadline for this, miss the deadline for that, and be completely confused about what needs to happen. So this is why I've put, they have to go in twice. So if a researcher says, yeah, I went in February, ask them, did you go back in April or May? And if they say no, then they missed a step. Again, we call these people, we email them, we send them reminders, but there are always a few that just miss everything. Yes? The request for installment does not, but they do have to accept the grant, and I don't believe they have to accept installments. Once they've accepted the grant for the full term, it comes in every year, usually with a notice of award, but it comes in. This is for NT and SC, and hopefully as they harmonize, our fingers are crossed, as they harmonize, they will take more of the FRQ-S approach to things and lose some of this. We're hoping.
FRQ-S has other quirks in that they don't include the research office, so we don't know that awards are being provided to the PIs. 3 months later, PIs looking for their money, no funds open. So we have other issues with FRQ-S. FRQ-ND and FRQ-S City has this, convoluted process that is extremely time-consuming for us, because we have to micromanage all these steps and make sure that everything's being done, versus Santé, they're all on their own and they're willy-nilly and we don't know what's going on. So both have issues. So Beaver is very appropriate in this.
But the thing is, too, just to jump in, is that the Santé still has the old kind of approach to research administration, and that the agency deals with the researcher. NT and SC, they're much more, they deal with us and we deal with the researchers, but Santé, they're very old school in that regard.
Do they contact the faculty when the study approach is successful, or is it still...
My understanding now, where I'm starting to learn the Santé Chachar Bossier. So for those of you who are in faculty of medicine, the Chachar Bossier is basically a salary award. And out of that salary award, they communicate with the investigators, but they do include the Faculty of Medicine Research Office. So the Faculty of Medicine is notified when the Chachar Bossier are successful. What has not been happening, what we're now currently trying to address to make things better, is that those that do get a research grant, because not all of the FFQS salary awardees also get a research grant portion, and this is where in the past, OSR was not notified. Like, we would be notified 3, 4, 5 months later, so the poor PI never got access to their monies until much later in the year. We're trying to correct that. We're working closely with Dahlia and Medicine to try and circumvent that so we kept them quickly. But the other issue with that is, for example, if I could ask that research grant portion, the PIs do, the salary award is always going to McGill. The research grant portion, the PIs may have let have it managed at one of the affiliated hospitals. So they have to go into, the PI goes into their room, and they tell FIQS, I want this grant administered at NUHC. We don't get notified, we don't know anything, we know that they've received a research grant, so if we just went in and authorized the opening of the fund, well, lo and behold, we never get it because the PI said it was at NUHC. We don't get notified, so it's a very convoluted process. So even with FRQS, it is difficult. So we do need to be cautious that if you have investigators who have an FRQS Chachar Bossier, contact us. Worst case scenario, at least the PI will be put in the right direction.
So maybe follow up with them to make sure whether they got a research installment.
Yes, correct.
And where they want that.
Yes.
Exactly. So when they get a Chachar Bossier, we should be following up to say, congratulations, where do you want your research grant? And they have to go in. A lot of PIs don't understand that they also need to go into the system to say where they want the research portion awarded. So it is convoluted.
But that will automatically send the OSR checklist that you submitted at the time.
Yes.
Correct. You work with Dahlia to get the formal and the checklist at the end. Yes, that works. That's fine. But it's more the award notification process is, again, very complicated.
And some will go in and think that they have to select McGill for the research grant. So they'll select McGill, which prompts us to get a notice of award. We start working on it. Then they find out that, no, actually, you can elect. Like, there was a lot of misinformation. So then they find out they can open it at the MUHC. So then they go back in and they say MUHC, which generates a notice of award to the MUHC. But then McGill doesn't necessarily get notified that ours is voided. So just think of Beaker with the lab on fire, and that's Marlene. So anytime you see anything with FRQ, think of poor Marlene in her office. So post-award, on that note, onto the post-award, governing terms and conditions for FRQ funds. Generally speaking, if it's acceptable with tri-agency, it's acceptable with FRQ. Last year when we did the tri-agency session, we put an expense eligibility grid on the RAN network. We were going to update it to be for one for FRQ, but then the more we thought about it, the more we thought, no, the best way to approach this is just follow the tri-agencies. There are very few differences between them. So follow the tri-agencies, and if you're ever unclear, contact RFMS or OSR, and we'll clarify if it's acceptable, what needs to happen. excuse me. As I mentioned at the start of the presentation, previously each FRQ agency developed its own governing terms and conditions. So what was eligible at one agency wasn't always eligible at the next one, and they had different processes. And it was very complicated for research administrators as well for researchers, because some researchers that would participate on grants like at the SC and the NT, they just couldn't keep track of anything. So the FRQ agencies have now harmonized their policies and procedures. They've always had a common rules, but they never enforce it as the highest in the hierarchy of guidelines. It used to be the lowest. So the agency could set their guidelines, the program could set its guidelines, and then you had the general rules. What they're doing right now is they're flipping it so that the general rules and then the programs themselves can provide more restrictions, more clarifications, but it's always the common rules that... that's the most important thing. The FRQSC, we think, did it by accident, because they put it up in June 30th, and then so we saw it, and we contacted the NT because some of their guidelines didn't line up, and the NT admitted that they had no idea that the SC had posted the guidelines. So it seems like the FRQSC jumped the gun on this, and they have they put it up. But it's up there, and the English one will be out expected this month. If there's, as a general rule, if you feel comfortable in French, always use the French version, because if there are any discrepancies in the translation, the French one trumps the English one. The English one is just for informational purposes. The French one is the actual guidelines. So I always work from the French. If I'm sending it to a researcher, I send them the English so that they can read it, but then I say you should also always make sure that you're checking it against the French one. And if you have any questions, you can contact me. And that's the way we should work. You should always have the French one. And same thing when the program guidelines, they will often translate the program guidelines, but always make sure you're reading the French ones as well as the English ones, because there are sometimes discrepancies. Common rules provide the overarching guidelines, but program literature may provide further precisions on restrictions within the particular funding opportunity. So it's always common rules and then program literature. Common rules. It's consistent with the tri-agency. The common rules used to be fairly short. This one is pretty much the TAFAG. It's got everything in there, ethics, IP. All their policies are summarized in that document. And as well as eligibility, post-award management. For those of you who work in the pre-award, they have different eligibility criteria for different types, levels of researchers within the teams. Appended at the back of this, there's an appendix which it contains several schedules of how they define each eligibility of each researcher. So if you're unclear, if you're helping a researcher and you're not sure where they would fit, if they're eligible to be the full researcher or more of a collaborator role, check that grid, because it's quite helpful. And it applies to all grant funding received from the agencies, including any interinstitutional transfers. So any money that we get from, let's say, Regroupement Stratégique, it follows those guidelines. Some of the clusters and research centers date from so long ago that they kind of do their own thing, but they are bound to those rules, and we do have to enforce them. So how do I assess if an expense is eligible? The same way you always do. Is it allowable, allocable, reasonable, and consistent? I think that's the fourth time I put that in the slides. So yeah, it's a good slide. So we're just going to keep using it. are indirect costs eligible? This is something that's brand new this year and made our panic in the award approval even worse than usual. Yes. Depending on the funding opportunity, for example, infrastructure grants, including Groupement Réseau, are not eligible for indirect costs. This is new this year. They had announced it in the Politique Nationale on Research and Innovation. That was with the previous government, and that was something the previous government was making a big deal out of. So we had assumed, most universities, we being most universities, had assumed that when the government changed in the spring, this would be dead. From what we understand is that they are keeping part of it, reviewing clauses, but the intention is to keep it. And one of the main things of it was that they would be including indirect costs of 27% on eligible grant funding. So whereas before we used to get it through another mechanism, just like the indirect cost program, so based on how many grants we got, we get this other pot of money. Now it's tied to each grant payment. So each grant that's eligible will have 27% above and beyond the grant funding that they requested. What they did this year was we thought that they were going to implement it in the applications this fall. So researchers, when they're doing their budget, would just have an indirect cost line. What they did instead was that all the researchers who had applied last year, when they awarded the grants, plus 27%. So we got these awards that were 27% more. And then we start asking, what's going on? And every university in Quebec was caught off guard by this. This wasn't just McGill was not informed. Every university was caught off guard. And there was quite a panic because we don't know how to do institutional transfers now, because technically, as you know, we share indirect costs when we do institutional transfers. What all universities have decided is until this is sorted out, because the agencies haven't actually put out an official communication on it, until it's sorted out, all the universities have decided we're just not going to transfer indirect costs, we're just going to transfer direct costs, and at the end of the year, we'll all just get around the table and settle what we owe each other. And that's the way it's working right now, and we haven't heard any indication that it's going to change because they still haven't put out any communication. So some universities, I think they're all doing the transfers now, but some universities weren't even issuing transfers for the first couple months because they were so concerned about how this was going to work. They just told all the researchers, no money's going outside our university until we can sort this out. McGill and a few others decided we would transfer, but we would transfer knowing that we'll have to go back in and sort all this out after. We still don't know how we're going to sort that out. As some of you, like, who have may seen, like, some contracts or some grant agreements from time to time, the university may agree to lower the indirects sometimes for researchers. We can't on this case. It has to be 27%. We can't dip into that. It can't be transferred into actual direct costs. It's strictly stated. It also says you can't charge you can't use it as a salary top up for a researcher. So you can't, you know, pull it and then give it back to them. So this is something that is fixed. For the time being, until we know more, it is not negotiable. 27% on all provincial.
Universities so far, no one has taken that step of actually telling no grant agencies you have to pay off. But again, this is all in discussion, so we will communicate more information as we know more how we're all going to be doing these indirect costs on provincial grants moving forward. So if you see things coming through the RAN about provincial indirect.
And a lot of the accredited agencies were foundations and things, so the likelihood that there will be indirect costs paid by them is low. Just letting you know as research administrators what the word is. Some examples of ineligible expenses, same thing as tri-agency. But always check the funding opportunity because, for example, some say you can't pay stipends. You can only pay salaries to students, so things like that. But generally speaking, if you're following the tri-agencies, you're following the rules. I did include that you can't have landlines. It does say this directly in the guidelines of the agency, that you can't charge the costs of landline phones to the grant portion of your FRQ funds. This is something that comes up every year, so we just want to make that clear. The indirect costs are provided for costs like that, but you can't charge them to the direct costs. Can changes be made to the project plans? Yes, provided that the research activities continue to support the broad objectives. PI has the authority to determine the direction of the research. Can expenses be reallocated? Yes, generally yes. Unless the notice of award guidelines say something different. I mean, sometimes it does happen that it's a very strategic program and they want it spent on certain things. That would be specified in the terms and conditions in InfoEd. But yes, expenses can be reallocated. As long as it's supporting the research objectives, they have authority to rebudget. Oh, the new thing is there first. What happens if unspent funds remain in the account at the end of the year? All unspent funds can be carried forward from one year to the next until the end of the term of the grant, and this is where things change. This is new. This was in the guidelines this year. Used to be they had an automatic no-cost extension of 1 year. Now it says applicants are eligible to request a no-cost extension of 1 year, but it must be requested in advance from the agency explaining the activities to be supported. This is new. As some of you know, we've always opened up the awards for the full term, inclusive of the no-cost extension. We continue to follow up with the agency, and we're just leaving them as is for now. We're not going to take any action on changing the timelines on the grants until we have confirmation from the agency that they indeed want us to contact them every time. So this is new. We're just letting you know. We'll inform you when we get a decision, but just so you know, you may have to advise researchers to contact the agency. This expense was included in the proposal, which was accepted without budget reduction by the peer review committee. Therefore, it is eligible and should be allowed. I finally found someone with a wagging finger. I was so excited. Tip of the hat, wag of the finger. When recommending, same thing as tri-agency, when recommending a proposal for funding, the peer review committees evaluate the feasibility and appropriateness of the amount requested. They do not pronounce themselves on eligibility of expenses. So this is something that comes in a lot, even especially with FRQ, because with FRQ, they have restrictions on they want most of the money spent in Quebec. Well, they fund projects that involve activities outside of Quebec. Their take is, well, the university has to make that work. So in those cases, we have to sit down with the researcher and we have to find a way that we can make it work within the guidelines of the agency. And then the researcher, for example, I had this question of, well, why did they even award me funding? well, they awarded you funding because they thought the proposal was meritorious. It's not their business to determine how you're actually going to make it work. They give that to the PI and the university. With previous grants, this expense is reimbursed without issue. I don't understand why this expense is now not allowable. Same thing as the tri-agency, but this is something to enforce, is that the tri-agencies always did some type of audit, site visit. They've always been coming. Even before they had clear rules, they would come and check on to see how we were doing. FRQ has never done that, but they've made it quite clear in recent years as part of their new FRQ structure that they will be doing this, that they intend to audit, site visit all the universities in Quebec to make sure that we're following all the rules. So before, we could maybe work around it with the knowledge that there was no oversight. Now we have to go with the assumption that there will be oversight and probably they'll be looking at these records. So we have to make sure that they're in order. I mean, we should be doing that generally, but as a side note, please do that, but make sure that in these cases that we are paying attention to that and making our researchers aware that in the past, yes, FRQ was basically here's your money, go do what you need to do, but now there's a lot more monitoring being built in, and we're seeing that definitely in the language of the common rules. It gave the impression that we could expect site visits in the coming years. And there's also talk of maybe having all the universities sign an agreement, much like the MOU that we signed with tri-agencies. So if that does follow through, we can expect to have site visits. Who can be paid using FRQ funds? Same thing as tri-agency. If they're eligible to apply for funds, they're not allowed to be paid on grant funds. Again, grant funds. So salary awards are not grants. They're different. And so that's the same. And then any individual, this is something new that they added this year. Any individual who is paid from a regular operating budget of a Government of Quebec funded organization, including post-secondary institutions, cannot be paid using grant funds. It does not apply to research center grants, because those allow salary to be paid. They can charge salary of the director to the grant. But otherwise, if they are currently an employee of a Quebec organization, says post-secondary, the way I'm reading it is also hospitals. If they're paid from the budget of the operating budget of a hospital, they're generally not eligible to be paid with these funds, which makes sense because it's a provincial agency. If we're provincially funded, we should be moving money around like that. Stipends to students are often an ineligible expense. Consult the program literature for more details. Often you have to charge salaries. You can't do stipends. Can expenses be incurred outside of Quebec? Yes, but it is expected that grant funds be used to support activities taking place in Quebec. However, provided the expense can be justified as advancing the project's objectives, it can be eligible. You just have to be able to demonstrate that it is acceptable and that no expertise within Quebec, like you couldn't do this in Quebec for whatever reason. That would be your justification. If it's like an expert, you're bringing in an expert consultant, and there's just no knowledge here, there's no company that does that, well, that's easy. Then your justification is that you had to go outside of Quebec. But you can't pay salaries to students enrolled at institutions outside of Quebec. This is something that we're still looking into. They clarified that this year in the guidelines, so I'm hoping to get more information from the agencies, and I'll get back to you on that. But for the time being, if you see any, you shouldn't be receiving invoices or anything from other institutions, but just keep in mind that if researchers are talking about hiring a student and they're not enrolled at a Quebec university, to come talk to OSR and RFMS to make sure that we have, that we can assess the situation and see what needs to happen. What happens when a grant holder resigns from McGill? Well, as most of you know, they don't usually stay within Quebec, so the grant gets terminated. But if, for whatever reason, they're moving within a Quebec university, the grant could move over to the new location. With the exception of equipment, equipment grants, any unspent funds in the equipment grant cannot be moved. That has to be returned to the agency. So if you know a researcher is leaving and they have to purchase equipment, what I would recommend is they purchase the equipment now and then move the equipment. They just can't move the unspent balance, but the equipment is expected to be moved. So in those cases, you need to sit down with the researcher and determine what they're going to do. If a grant holder resigns from McGill and leaves Quebec and no one co-investigator will be taking over the grant will need to be terminated as of the end date. Institutions, this is something that's new in the guidelines. Institutions are expected to take steps to ensure that all items purchased with agency funds, as well as data banks of importance to Quebec society, continue to be made available to the Quebec scientific community. We're looking into how we're going to manage that. Basically, what it means is that if a researcher has purchased equipment with an FRQ grant, before they leave the institution, we have to assess, and we may have to follow up with the agency to get clearance to move it. What they want to avoid is they want to avoid someone purchasing equipment and then moving to, I don't know, Michigan or something, so that it's no longer of use to the community that they're serving. They want it to stay here whenever possible. How we will manage that, we're not sure. But again, contact us if you have questions. And contact us as soon as you know a PI has resigned. What happens when a grant holder takes a sabbatical leave? This is new and this is exciting. They don't have to inform the agency anymore. So this is great. This takes a lot of work off my desk. PI can take a sabbatical leave and continue to hold their grant without prior approval of the agency, as long as the research activities are ongoing during the leave. If for whatever reason they do anticipate a significant stoppage of activities, like they won't be at working on this project at all during their sabbatical leave, then the agency should be notified. When on research leave, grant holder can continue to incur research costs. Ineligible costs include the same thing as tri-agency. So traveling to your home institution for supervisory purposes, not eligible, living expenses, those activities. What happens when a grant holder takes a maternity, parental, or sick leave? This is also new. We used to have to notify them every time, and they would assess if the grant could continue. Now what they say is that any leave covered in the Loi sur les normes de travail can continue to access their funds. If you're on any leave that's in that workplace law, you remain eligible to hold your funds, and you don't have to inform the agency. However, they will automatically assign you an extension if you want, because they don't defer like the tri-agencies. So if you go to them and you provide proof that you were on maternity leave for 8 months, they automatically add 8 months to the term of your grant. But you don't have to request the extension. We would recommend it because most people need that extension. And that's how that works. PI might opt to delegate signing authority to another member of the team while they're away. But, of course, they ultimately remain responsible for everything that happens. Oops. Can new research team members be added to a grant? Yes, contact OSR for details. Obviously, for new researcher grants, there's no co-investigators, so it doesn't count. But for team grants, yes, provided they meet the eligibility criteria. Often what happens is because they have to have at least two for a lot of team grants that are at the full researcher status in addition to the PI. So if someone leaves from another institution, let's say, for example, one of your co-investigators at Concordia, he leaves Quebec, he's no longer eligible to be at that level. So you have to find someone else to replace them. Otherwise, you're no longer eligible to hold the grant. So contact OSR. How can research funding be issued to team members? Research funds can be issued to team members at other Quebec post-secondary institutions and some research organizations. For the FRQ, all inter-institutional transfers are processed via RFMS because you can only transfer funds to eligible institutions. If there are options, if we need to do a cost-reimbursable sub-award agreement with an entity, let's say, outside of Quebec for research expenses being incurred exceptionally outside of Quebec, that would be OSR, but for the most part, transfers of funds are RFMS. And to request a transfer of funds, the PI, this is important, the PI has to do it, must write to RFMS, the RFMS financial administrator, confirming name of co-investigator, institution, amount to be transferred, and McGill fund number or agency fund number, or agency grant number, and then the transfer is initiated. Same thing if we are a co-investigator on a project. So let's say Université Laval gets a grant, because we get this question a lot. My colleague at Université Laval, I'm participating on a project that's awarded to Université Laval. I want to know how I get my money. Well, how they get their money is you copy this text here and say, you need to have the PI at Laval do these steps. And as soon as that happens, then it's quite a quick turnaround, actually, on transfers between institutions in Quebec. It's, I would say, if everything's in order, it can take a month. 2 months? 2 months, 2 months. It's actually, because we all know the rules, it's all very easy. Except for when it comes to these indirect costs, but we're just all pretending it's not there, so. Who can authorize or initiate expenditures on FRQ grants? It's the same thing as tri-agency, so follow the tri-agency guidelines. Still have questions? Contact the RFMS help desk. As we said with tri-agency, we try and have questions, general questions about eligibility, terms and conditions, routed through the RFMS help desk because it helps them better track types of inquiries we're getting so that they can better assess their own materials and what they need to answer these questions. So the FRQ financial reporting, I'm just going to do this, but if you have any questions, there are people from RFMS that can answer specific questions about it. Roles and responsibilities, this is pretty much the same thing as we did for tri-agencies, except for it's not a Canadian flag. That's all. Pretty much all we changed, and then we added two bullets to the grant holders. So they're responsible. The two bottom ones are responsible to request transfers of funds to team members only when McGill is the lead. It's their responsibility to do that. We don't take action. If we see it's a team grant, we may follow up and we may say, okay, what transfers of funds do you anticipate for the year? But there's nothing that prompts us to do that. And the same thing applies to the other institutions. There's nothing that prompts them to start issuing money without the PI's authorization. And they're responsible to approve financial statements and online system by June 30th of each year. And if they do not, if we miss the June 30th deadline, the FRQ does not pay us. All payments, not just their payment, all payments go on hold until this person clicks, I accept the financial report. So that's something that happens behind the scenes, and we don't necessarily communicate it to the community, but that's where we could use your help. It's not a bad way to nudge them to get it done, to say that everyone won't get paid until you do this. I mean, we've never gone that long, but it's been an issue before.
They did withhold the payment until everyone had approved, so we have to run after those PIs to get it all done.
And those are usually the PIs that have been we put the financial report in about May, so these people have been disregarding those automated emails all that time. So, yeah. So we ask your help in making sure that it's done in a timely manner. Because this is how we do it. It's the same process that we use for tri-agency. So they do the initial steps to try and see how many they have to do, flag any ineligible expenses that will need to be moved, send reminders to PIs to clear outstanding travel advances, encumbrances on terminating funds. April, June, completion of financial statement, including PI's approval, due by June 30th. This is when the emails start from the extranet. Usually around April, May, RFMS starts putting in the information and hitting save. And when they put in the information and hit save, that's what starts generating those emails. So if a researcher gets an email from Do Not Respond at FRQ saying, please complete your report, and they often get confused about the report, even though it says financial right in the subject line, they get confused about what report is owed. If it's an email from the Do Not Respond at FRQ and it's around April, May, it's the financial report. Just tell them it's your financial report. You have to go in and look at it and click OK. And then July, December is when RFMS looks at the process and determines what they could do better, what needs to happen for next year. So the extranet financial statement, the PI approval process, I just put this in for your own information so that if a PI is asking, how do I go in and complete my financial report or approve the financial statement, this is what they need to do. This is actually included in the email that they get that's prepared by RFMS when they hit save and it starts sending. This is what they get. So you can just copy and paste it into an email for them. They need to go into the FRQ NT or SE, depending on which one they use. This is where it is kind of silly because they look exactly alike unless you see the little logo on the side. So there is a little text box that says, are you sure you're at the right agency? And then it's like, you are at FRQ NT, do you mean SC? And it clicks you to the other one. But make sure that they're trying to log into the right system because I've had researchers that couldn't figure out why they couldn't get in, and it turns out they were at the wrong system. And then they just go into their profile. And after logging in, you go Cherche Financier, click on the report, and it's there, and then you approve. You can even save a copy for yourself. Of course, if they have any questions about the information in the report, they should follow up with RFMS. And then it's important to note that this is one of their responsibilities. This is a PI's responsibility to go in and approve this report. So we know that many of them are away in May and June. That's often when a lot of conferences take place. They start traveling. They need to make themselves available. They don't necessarily have to be on campus, but they have to have planned to be around mid-May, late May, so that they have access to a computer so they can go in and do this. It's very important. So how many did we do last year? This is the total of financial reports that were submitted by RFMS to the FRQ. As you can see, we do not only McGill-led projects, but inter-institutionals. So we have quite a lot to do. And so that's a total of 463. And as you'll see, we have one financial administrator. So this is where we really need everyone's help. So if you know researchers have FRQ funding within your portfolios, send them a reminder. Just a reminder that you will have to go into the system, approve your report. If you have any questions, you can contact me, but make sure you're doing this. We're going to try to send reminders even to the RAN so that we also remind everyone of it. That's for now, we ask your help. And supporting evidence requirement, this is the same as the tri-agencies. They've started putting in some supporting evidence requirements into the common rules, so we need to start following tri-agency on this. We should be anyway, but there we go. And questions, that was it. Any other questions on the FRQ? I talk really fast, sorry. Yes? Yes. The FRQS doesn't go through the extranet, and the FRQS doesn't require annual financial reports. They require usually one at the midterm of the project and then one at the end. So those are dealt with much like tri-agency in that they're just sent to the PI for validation and then they're sent to the agency. They don't use this whole system because they don't right now require annual reports. If they do start doing annual reports, we can assume that they will adopt this system. They will start using it. But for the time being, no, they don't. And they don't require annual financial reports either. Any other questions? Any questions? Yes?
Just to elaborate on the slide about the expenses incurred in Quebec, is that attended to conferences?
Yes. That's under knowledge dissemination, knowledge translation. That's different. It's not travel. Travel doesn't count. It's more hiring of personnel, incurring actual research expenses, like bringing students and things. It's very unclear on how you're supposed to do that and stay in Quebec. A lot of activities, they just don't take place here for a variety of reasons. You need to go other places to meet people, to do things. So it's just a matter of whenever possible, you're supposed to have activities taking place in Quebec and incur expenses in Quebec. One thing they did mention in the common rules, which I thought was interesting, was when you're purchasing equipment, they encourage you, you are strongly encouraged to get the most energy efficient equipment. Which I thought that was kind of funny because, it's the province of Quebec. They fund universities. They don't want us buying equipment that's going to bankrupt us when we turn it on. So that was one of the things that they put in, which I thought was actually quite smart of them to put in the common rules. So it's little things like that. They're mostly giving guidelines on how they'd like to see things done, but they recognize that it's not always possible, if that makes sense. Okay. Any other questions? I realize I didn't do the intro, and I was supposed to talk about the next session, so I'll just do it now. The next session will be on the OSR reorganization. You may have noticed that some people's titles have changed, and things are changing, just the way the contact us page has been moving around. It's currently underway. We're not able to confirm everything right now, but by September, Marlene will be presenting on the new organizational chart of OSR. RFMS will talk about some personnel changes in their structures, and I think that was it.
That's it. Teams, we're changing things around considerably. So in September, we'll provide people with updates as to how OSR is now being organized and moving forward.
for the time being, whoever you're talking to in OSR, continue to talk to them. Like, don't worry about that. If it's not their portfolio anymore, it will get shifted around, but just don't worry about that. Just call the person that you're used to talking to, and then we'll sort from there.
A better direction in my future.
Yes, very much better direction.
I'm excited.
Yes, I'm excited too. And one other thing was that there was a message sent to the funding listserv last night about SHRC, a message from SHRC, I guess I should mention this. So they've now they used to have, remember at the, I've mentioned it before in the tri-agency presentation as well as other presentations, they had this funny, you can be outside of Canada, but maybe not. Some funding opportunities you can. And so it was never really clear on if the person was primarily located outside of Canada, if they were eligible to apply. They've put out messages that they are no longer eligible to apply. If the person is primarily located outside of Canada, they're no longer eligible to be a grant holder. And they did include a line that gives the impression that it does apply to ongoing grants. That's something that we're looking at in OSR, so it shouldn't impact too many, but we do have to go back and we have to assess everything. Yes, and Joanna can jump in.
I already got some emails from researchers who are, for example, on secondment somewhere in the U.S., you know, like on a two-year position at the, I don't know, some international organization. Would that affect them as well? Are they still, like, they show up on our HR list?
It depends, one, on the duration of their leave, because they have guidelines on how long you can be away from the university. If they're away, if they're on leave of a time that's acceptable to SHRC, and they continue to hold a position, they are continue to be eligible. If they have an adjunct status here, but they're they're an associate professor in the U.S., that's a no. Yeah. So it's a case by case. So if you know of any, we're going to look at everybody. Like, we have to do the ongoing eligibility anyway, so we're going to look at all the grant holders. But if you know of any cases that are particular, contact me, and Joanna and I will review and determine if this person is eligible to be a grant holder. There are a few cases that some of you have already notified me about, and I'm still waiting for an answer from SHRC. So those ones are underway, but any others that we have, contact me, and we'll determine what to do. All right, so thank you very much for joining us today. I hope that it was informative. Yes.
About visas.
Yes.
I think I work at Capital Spot.
Yes.